It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The radical Democrats want to dismantle, demolish, and destroy everything that you've gained. They want to have open borders. They want to have drugs pouring into our country. Democrats also want to bring in unlimited numbers of foreign refugees from overseas. Look at what's happening to Democrat-run cities. Democrats even want to give free health care to illegal immigrants. Virtually every top Democrat also now supports late-term abortion. Every major Democrat running for president supports a massive government takeover of health care. Democrats are now the party of high taxes, high crime, open borders, late-term abortion, and socialism. The Republican Party is the party of the American worker, the American family, and the American dream.
All right, that was the president last night in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And there's a big, two races in North Carolina, special races, especially the one in which you will recall Mark Harris, who was is a pastor who's been a guest for us many times, won that seat, but never took it because he won by 900 votes against Dan McCreary. And then there was a filing that there'd been something illegal that happened in Mark Harris's campaign. Turns out one of his workers, I don't know if it was actually the guy that was running his campaign, but one of his chief workers was fraudulently collecting and falsifying absentee ballots, mishandling absentee ballots. I guess that would be the best way to say it. And so Mark Harris never did take the seat. It was such a terrible loss. You know, the left hated Mark Harris because he was so strongly in favor of the bathroom bill that meant that you had to go to the bathroom of your biological birth sex, and you could not just go to any bathroom. You remember what a dust-up that was. Remember dust-up? That doesn't even capture it. You remember that so many businesses boycotted. In fact, PayPal and Deutsche Bank pulled expansions in the state. The NBA, the NCAA pulled out events from the state. Bruce Springsteen, Pearl Jam canceled concerts. A&E Network, 21st Century Fox said they would reconsider using North Carolina as a filming location. And more than 200 major CEOs and business leaders signed a letter asking Governor McCrory to repeal the law. That was the bathroom bill in North Carolina. It was quite a dramatic situation. And Mark Harris was on the front lines of fighting that bill. Dan McCreary was on the other side of that. He's the Democratic former veteran who ran against him. And Mark Harris finally actually himself called for a re-election. Mark, from all accounts, and there was a lot of investigation, knew nothing about that, didn't know what his staffer was doing, stepped aside and decided not to run this time. So this is a special election. You can imagine that the left is painting this as a race that President Trump must win, or it indicates that he's lost his popularity. I want to say this before I go any further. If any of you are from North Carolina and have something to share, not just, hey, I'm from North Carolina, but if you know something about this race or something you want to share, we're going to open the phone lines right now. 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. If any of you were at the rally last night and have something to report, or if you know something about this race that you want us to know, then give us a call. It's 888-589-8840. I'll put you right on. But again, make sure you have something to say, not just, yes, I'm from North Carolina and hi. Interestingly, the AP wrote about the rally last night with President Trump, and this is so typical of the way the media talks about the president. I want to read this to you. This is how it starts. Trying to prove his political clout by pushing a Republican to victory in a special election, President Donald Trump used a North Carolina rally to paint a bleak picture of a nation he claimed would be overrun with crime, poverty, and immigrants if Democrats seize power in Washington. Trump appearing Monday at his first campaign rally in nearly a month. Like, that's such a long time. His first campaign, no other president has ever done this in the way that I, in my memory, going out to different states and spending hours on the stage in front of people in his state. They do an appearance, but the way they put this is that Trump appearing Monday at his first campaign rally in nearly a month went on the offensive in an effort to change a series of late summer negative headlines over his, now here we go, his slipping poll numbers, warning signs of an economic slowdown, and a running battle over hurricane forecasts. Those are the things that the AP thinks define the president's presidency. He urged the Fayetteville crowd to vote for Republican Dan Bishop on Tuesday, brandishing his usual incendiary rhetoric to declare from the stage that tomorrow is a chance to send a clear message to the American-hating left. And so that's the way they write. Also, then, they go on to claim that this will be a bellwether, that the president won this district of Mark Harris's. Actually, I'll read it to you. They say, exactly, I will not put words in their mouth. The district has been held by the GOP since 1963. In 2016, Trump won the district by 11 percentage points. Should Bishop, Dan Bishop, defeat Democrat Dan McCready, it could give Trump room to assert that he pulled Bishop over the top. If McCready prevails or Bishop wins by a whisker, it will suggest GOP erosion and raise questions about Trump's and his party's viability for 2020. So the reason it's important is because, of course, the media, they've already told you, they're going to tell you that President Trump is inevitably going to be defeated because, after all, he carried that district by 11 points in the prior election, and you can see how far his approval has gone. And I would just say this, Dan McCready is a Democrat who embraces the Democratic principles, and he was a chief opponent of Mark Harris on that bathroom bill. Dan, the other nominee, the new Republican nominee, who's not that familiar to me, to be honest with you. I'm going to give you his name, though, because since they're both Dans, I've got to get this right. Dan Bishop was the actual sponsor in the House, of the State House, of the bathroom bill. That was the one that insisted that people go to the bathroom that comports with their gender. Dan Bishop was the sponsor of that bill, and certainly that comports to his benefit for many conservatives, and certainly for me, too. And so I don't know how conservative Dan Bishop is. I think that he's certainly talking like a conservative right now, and people are rooting for him to win in that. I'm not sure if this caller on the line is a go. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. If you are from North Carolina or you know something about this race, I would love to hear from you. Now, I want to read... We know that the Republicans have lost lots of seats. Lots of people have stepped aside. In fact, Maria Bartiromo talked with John Ratcliffe on her show about that just over the weekend. This is clip 7.
You've got all of these retirements going on in the House. I got to ask you about this. How do you feel about all of these people who we've talked about announcing that they are not going to run for re-election? They're retiring this term. It sort of, you know, speaks to the narrative that maybe the Republicans feel that they can't regain the House.
Well, I know that's a narrative that the media wants to push, but if you really look at the reasons, I mean, you have folks like my colleagues, Sean Duffy, who's retiring because he's dealing with a family medical issue. You have folks like Jim Sensenbrenner, who's been there for 4 decades and served well. So I don't think it has anything to do with Republican policies or direction or prospects. I do think that there is an element of Washington, D.C. is a very toxic environment, and a lot of folks just aren't enjoying their time serving in Congress and think there are better things that they can be doing. And I know that from conversations that I've had with a lot of my colleagues that have announced their retirements.
All right. So that was John Ratcliffe. But I want to talk about this for a second because some are saying, of course, and it is true that you lose 13 incumbent House members and then you've got name recognition in the primary. So the problem of gaining name recognition, as I just said, that Dan Bishop is unfamiliar to me. His name, McCreary, has been running and is in the front in North Carolina and has been since he ran against Mark Harris. So it's been months. Dan Bishop, on the other hand, is a state senator and is not as well known. So it's possible that McCreary could win because of name recognition. We just don't know, but that's why the president was there last night. Now, let me just say, Richard Viguerie, who is he's a bellwether for the conservative movement. Richard has been around for so many years, and yet he's still vital in writing and sharing his expertise. And he wrote an article that I find really interesting. It says, he said 2020 may be the best year in a decade for conservatives to run for Congress. And he talks about how while we will miss a few of the retirees, most of them are either rhinos or have been unreliable disappointments to us when tough votes came to the floor. The establishment news media has done its best to make this string of retirements look like a disaster for Republicans. But while it may be a disaster for the Republican establishment, it is a once-in-a-decade opportunity for conservatives. So rather than bemoan the clearing of this dead wood, conservatives should look back at history and recognize the opportunity the 2020 election offers. And then he does go back in history, goes back to Barry Goldwater. I won't go into all of that, but he cites all the reasons why this is a great opportunity for conservatives to take the seats. He says, or to run for those seats. The Ryan and McCarthy leadership's team's abysmal performance in advancing President Trump's agenda and the disastrous results of their campaign strategy and fundraising discredited them with grassroots conservative voters to the point that any House Republican conference that wished to regain the majority should have replaced every one of them with a principled, limited government constitutional conservative such as Ohio's Representative Jim Jordan or North Carolina's Mark Meadows. But that didn't happen after the 2018 election, which means limited government constitutional conservatives must step up and put themselves forward to run for Congress. And then he goes on and gets very practical, and so I'm going to join him in getting very practical. He says that the filing deadline in seven states is coming up right now, and I'm going to give you those states: Alabama, Arkansas, California, Illinois, Texas, Ohio, and North Carolina. Those filing deadlines will be here very quickly. In Texas, where five winnable seats in Congress are now open, the filing opens on Saturday, November the 9th, and closes on Monday, December the 9th. And Richard says Texas conservatives should also keep an ear to the ground for any last-minute retirements in the days before filing closes. This strategy is often used by the Republican establishment to finesse their candidate on the ballot without giving conservatives a vote in a primary election. And all of this is true. Richard understands the process. I do too, but he's been around a lot longer than I have. And I want to put this article on our Facebook page because I really like for you to read the details of it. And if you're interested in running or if you know someone who is, remember these dates. All of these states are coming up with, we're having all kinds of retirements. And most of those retirements, again, are people that you haven't heard of or they've done precious little with the sacred trust that you have placed in them in various states. We need people in there. I agree with Richard, like Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, who will fight, you know, who will fight and who will represent their country, their county, their state faithfully. So we'll put this on our Facebook page. It's 2020, maybe the best year in a decade for conservatives to run for Congress. All right, so that's the race today. For those of you in North Carolina, your choices are between Democrat Dan McCready and Republican Senator Dan Bishop, and all eyes are on that race for so many different reasons. So I hope you'll take that to heart. Well, now there are other things to tell you, but I'm going to save them for a bit. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening. You may have seen yesterday that Iran is now building up their centrifuges and really openly violating the JCPOA, which is the Iranian deal that they still are technically obligated to in the signing of it with European partners. And France is offering millions of dollars to help Iran and pump them up because the U.S. withdrawing out of that agreement has crippled them financially. So why would France do that? What's going on with Macron? I mean, if Iran is as bad as we say they are, and they are, why in the world would the French do everything they could to prop them up? That's a really good question, don't you think? Well, Fred Flights will join us in a second to answer that question. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So when people first hear about MediShare, they have questions, some really good questions, starting with the obvious. What is it? Well, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. It's not health insurance. It's a different way of doing things which leads us to the next question. Why do people do this? Why do they become MediShare members? Here are two of the biggest reasons. Number one, people feel good about it. They're not trapped in a plan that makes them pay for things they don't believe in. They know their money is going to help people. And the second reason, people save a lot of money. Maybe you've heard us mention the typical family saves about $500 a month switching to MediShare. And one more big question, does it work? The answer is yes, 1,000 times yes, or 400,000 times, since that's how many MediShare members there are, and they've shared over $2 billion in medical expenses. So easy to find out right now how MediShare can work for you. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Brandon Lips, Food and Nutrition Service Administrator at the Department of Agriculture. His department oversees social services programs, including food stamps and child nutrition. Proverbs 22:9 reminds us of the importance of helping those in need. The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Brandon Lips as he works to provide food for our nation's poor. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Taking inventory of diversity. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
I warn parents in my new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation, that many public schools have been turned into indoctrination centers for the left. The other day, I received a message from Dina Bartis, the parent of a son at Heritage High School in Wake Forest, North Carolina. On the second day of class, her son's 10th grade English honors teacher passed out a diversity inventory worksheet, called on students to reveal their religion, economic status, and sexual preference. Mrs. Bartis rightly pointed out the teacher had created an atmosphere of segregation in the classroom, singling out students based on the color of their skin and how much money they have. The Wake County Public School System said they have instructed the teacher to discontinue the lesson immediately. That's according to the reporting of the Raleigh News and Observer. You can get a copy of my book at toddstarnes.com.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I like the idea of meeting. I've met with a lot of bad people and a lot of good people during the course of the last almost 3 years. It was my idea, and it was my idea to terminate it. I didn't discuss it with anybody else. They're dead. As far as I'm concerned, they're dead.
The Afghan nation has already said that there are no limitations for the negotiations, but peace is not unconditional. But now negotiations without ceasefire are impossible.
When Trump takes over, things get messed up. For the U.S. to meet with the Taliban and not have the leader of Afghanistan to meet with the Taliban is something that's doomed to failure.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Of course, we hear every night in the headlines all of the various conflicts around the globe, mostly in the Middle East. Still, we've been in Afghanistan, 18 years? And so the president famously was supposed to meet with Taliban leaders at Camp David last Sunday, and he called it off because they caused the death of one of our soldiers last week. But, of course, that's not the first time. It's interesting, you know, I find myself wondering, you know, why in the world, how odd that we should ever negotiate with the Taliban. Then I remember that sort of started with Rex Tillerson when he was Secretary of State. We're going to touch on Afghanistan, and then we're going to talk about what in the world's going on with Iran, as I told you before the break. And Fred Flights, who's the president of the Center for Security Policy. Fred is also the former deputy assistant to President Trump and the former chief of staff for the National Security Council. And you may wonder why Fred has not been with us for a while. It's because he's been working in the White House, but he's free now. He's a free man. So, Fred, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, Sandy, good to be here.
Thank you. Hey, Fred, I know that Afghanistan is probably not your favorite topic to talk about, but I do. Do you think, am I correct to remember that Tillerson is the one that started this conversation with the Taliban?
Well, I think it did start under Tillerson, and it began because of the president's campaign promise that we get our troops out of Afghanistan. And when I left the NSC, I know many of us were surprised that the talks were going better than anyone thought. And, I mean, the idea of talking to this group obviously is important for many reasons, because they're responsible for the deaths of many American soldiers. They're a terrorist group. But how long are we going to be in Afghanistan? We've been there 15 years now. How many more soldiers are going to be sent there? And, I mean, the president's position is, we could send soldiers to every crisis all around the world to solve them. Why do we have to send soldiers here? I mean, he really has a sincere desire to somehow get our troops home or to substantially reduce the number of troops in the country, and that's what's going on here.
Well, the narrative, of course, is that this is the narrative I always hear, Fred, and I'm informing you, but I'm informing my listeners, is that all these terrorist groups are still bubbling in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and we must maintain a presence so that we do not have a resurgence of Al-Qaeda or whatever name they might call themselves in the next iteration, and that's why we're still in Afghanistan. You don't agree with that?
Well, I mean, no, I'm not saying I'm taking a position on that. I think that that's a valid position, but it's also valid that President Trump represents the view of a large number of Americans, that they don't know why we're still in Afghanistan, that they want our troops to come home, that they're tired of the casualties of American soldiers, that they don't know why the U.S. has to have a large military presence in this country. And this is something that a lot of Democrats support also. I mean, why did we go in there? We went in there to go after Al-Qaeda, which attacked the United States on 9/11. The Taliban was harboring Al-Qaeda, and we set up a new government in Afghanistan that has stopped, has significantly improved life for women in the country and has added a degree of democracy. But it's only there because we're enforcing it. How long do we do that?
Yeah, and you know as soon as we go, that's going to reverse because it's not part of Islamic teaching. I mean, it's really, I think George Rasley has written a really great piece about this, Fred, that he wrote a piece called Why America is Losing the War in Afghanistan, and the nut of what he says here is that we just don't understand our enemy. He goes back and quotes General Vo Nguyen Giap, who was the commander of the North Vietnamese Army, who points out in retrospect that in Vietnam, the reason that the Americans won was certainly not because of equipment or capabilities or the size or strength of the armies, but because we never really understood the Vietnamese, how they think and their tactics. And George is saying he thinks the same thing is true in Afghanistan. The reason we have not prevailed, well, we have. I mean, we really achieved our goal, but that our leaders don't understand Islamic thinking. And that's why we continue to have failures there. Would you agree with that?
I don't know that I would agree with that. We know that these radical Islamist terrorist groups flourish in ungoverned spaces. Afghanistan, as you know, is a very undeveloped, mountainous country where it's really difficult to stop these groups from finding places to establish a headquarters and to spread. I mean, ISIS wasn't even there a few years ago. Now it's a growing presence near the Pakistan border. If we wanted to, we could suppress the Taliban and all these terrorist groups in Afghanistan, but that's going to take 100,000 troops, which we had in the country not that long ago. The American people don't want that. Why should the taxpayer pay for that? There's a lot of countries that we could occupy and solve all the security problems posed to us in the rest of the world, but the American people don't think that's something we should be doing with our military.
Well, I think you're right about that. I think they're tired. And I sure, every time I see a casualty, and there have been several, you know, every life to us is precious. That's one thing that's very unique about America. One soldier is a huge loss. It's like a gut punch. And so I think we are tired of that without seeing a real any real results. I'm going to put this article by George on our Facebook page because I think it's really interesting why America is losing the war in Afghanistan. But let's turn to Iran, Fred, because you just wrote an article which I found really, really interesting and very. I learned a lot, actually, because I find myself wondering. Let me just state this. The Iran deal was made under President Obama was a disaster. Fred and I have discussed this on this radio show many, many times. And President Trump pulled out for good reason, for very good reasons. Iran's the number one in the world state sponsor of terror. Now we hear that France is offering $15 billion to help, I don't know, to pat them on the head, to reward them. Fred, many of us don't understand why a leader of a free country like France and Macron would try to prop up Iran. It's a mystery. Can you explain it?
Well, Iran is offering a $15 billion letter of credit to compensate the Iranians for the loss of revenue they are incurring for U.S. sanctions on their oil exports. And
well, that's even worse.
I know. It's many people said, well, this is because European states, and the Germans are in on this too, surprise, surprise. But this is because the Europeans want to do business with Iran. Some have said, well, they're more dependent on oil exports in the United States because they don't allow fracking. I think those factors might be true. But the main reason is that these countries are run by liberal, global internationals, globalists, who are determined to keep this deal, which was negotiated by the international elite without the U.S. Senate approving this agreement. It was imposed on our country. They know it's a bad deal, but they do not want to give it up because it is one of their agreements. It is a globalist achievement, and they're not going to give President Trump a win. They know the president is right that this is a bad deal, that Iran's cheating on it, and lately Iran has been cheating more and more. But the president represents a threat to these globalists, that their ideas, their international agreements that do not keep the people of the world, the American people in mind, they want to keep imposing agreements like this, like the Paris Climate Accord, keeping the UK in the European Union. There's a lot more at stake here than just this bad deal. It is a way the globalists would like to run the world. It's not just keeping this bad deal in force.
And you know what? That makes perfect sense, Fred. But let's drill to me because I know some things. But I don't think people generally Americans are not thinking about Europe and they're not thinking about the European Union and all of this. But we saw a glimpse of this. We got a taste of this with President Barack Obama, who was always talking about working with our other partners. Like we couldn't do anything unless we signed off with Europe. They had to be our partner. France is like our gold standard. We want to be like the French. And we have to always ask permission. And President Obama went so far as to say we had to lead from behind. He was really reflecting this globalist thinking you're talking about, wasn't he?
That's right. It was fine with Obama to subordinate the United States to the United Nations and European states. And frankly, the European states, they love multilateralism because they get to control U.S. foreign policy. The last thing they wanted was an insurgent president like Donald Trump who would take actions without asking the rest of the world. You may remember the argument people made, Mr. President, you can't pull out of the Iran deal because it will offend the Europeans. That yes. argument does not work with Donald Trump, and it doesn't make any sense. We stay in agreements that are in our interest, not because the Europeans say they are in our interests.
You know, the thing that you see across the globe, and you're seeing it here too, Fred, except our president is an exception, but the Congress is not. And that is, we have these rulers, and I'll say rulers, by whatever particular they're called, their titles, who are completely ignoring the will of the people and pursuing what you just described, this globalist, and the whole idea of a one world order used to be such a black helicopter theory. But you can see that these particular leaders are becoming more and more of one accord when it comes to language and free speech, and they are ignoring their people. And I'll point to France, you know, the Yellow Vest movement, Macron, you know, the people out in the streets, and the reports that the middle class in France are just being squeezed to death, and the immigrants, illegal immigrants, are illegal in some cases in France, are getting the benefits and killing the middle class while they are really beginning to just stress not being able to provide their families. And then we have Brexit, where the people voted. They want to leave the EU, but the leaders won't let them. And now we have a president here who actually is reflecting the will of the people and a Congress who doesn't. So this is kind of a move worldwide. I don't know how what your read on all of that is, Fred. Are they calling each other on the phone? Are they emailing each morning this strategy? What's driving this?
Well, the president's withdrawal represents his America First strategy of making sure our foreign policy represents the interests of our country, the interests of our people, and the interests of the American worker. And that is not, and it doesn't mean we ask the UN if we need permission, or European states, that we don't have to ask them for permission. And you can see when Donald Trump goes to these G8 summits, they're ready to gang up on him. The other European leaders, they know what's going on here. He has rejected the way they would like to see the world run. And this isn't to say that cooperating with other nations is bad. We want to work with alliances. Multilateralism has many good aspects, and it should be the way we try to do things. But if a group of liberal elites get together and agree on something that is not in our interests, the U.S. should withdraw from it. And that is revolutionary. It's revolutionary from the way this country was run, well, mismanaged under Barack Obama.
It's funny that General Mattis actually reported that in his book. Let me just say that in an exchange that you and I had recently, and I'm not talking out of turn, I don't think you'd mind me saying this, I've not been a fan of General Mattis, and you complimented him. And I think you should repeat that compliment, because I haven't given him very many in terms of his new book and what he had to say.
He's a good man. He's an American hero. And he had some policy differences with President Trump. That's fine. The president has surrounded himself with people that sometimes don't tell him what he wants to hear. That's a good thing. But, I mean, there's a number of good men who served in this administration. The president let them go. That doesn't mean they're bad people. General Mattis said some very good things in this book. For example, he noted that President Obama had ignored crucial intelligence that the Iranians were planning a terrorist attack in Washington, D.C., to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the United States by bombing a restaurant. Now, this came out in the press at the time, but Mattis makes it clear that based on the intelligence, this was far more serious than anyone realized, and it was sort of brushed under the rug to protect negotiations to get this terrible nuclear deal in line.
Yes, and he was honest about that, and so that did take a lot of courage. So I have a new view of him after that. All right, so let me ask you something else, Fred. You've been now on these international trips, and you've been working in intelligence and national security for most of probably your adult life, but you've been traveling and on close proximity to the president for the last several months. And when we hear conflicting views, is the president respected in the world? He may be hated, but is he respected?
I think he's respected, and I think he's feared. And that's what we want. We want other nations. We want enemies of the United States to wonder, to be unsure what the president of the United States will do if they engage in some belligerent or threatening act. The Iranians can't be sure what will happen if they attack an American ship in the Persian Gulf, if they try to take another oil tanker to try to seize it. I think that Trump is keeping them honest.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's a very spot on, Fred. It sounds to me like, and I think people are hearing conflicting things about that, and I wanted to know your opinion, so thanks for giving it. Let me just say that Fred's new article is Why is France Offering $15 Billion to Appease Iran? And so we'll put that on our Facebook page so you can read it and share it. It's really fascinating. Fred, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Okay, talk to you again soon. All right, Sandy Rios with you on AFR Talk.
By mercy and truth, iniquity is purged, and by the fear of the Lord, men depart from evil. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. We live in a day when churches are filled with people ready to hear and receive God's mercy. Unfortunately, however, it is often accompanied by a de-emphasis or concealment of the truth of God's word. Paul, the salvation by grace through faith apostle, was asked, if salvation is solely a product of grace, what benefit then does the law provide? Paul responded, without the law, I wouldn't have known God's righteous standard and how far away from it I was. Any presentation of God's mercy absent God's truth is no gospel at all. Iniquity is purged by mercy and truth.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hello, I'm Gary Robey, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday on American Family Radio. This one-hour program will lead you in a special time of worship and praise. We will focus on God's Word, spoken and in music. Call to Worship has a different topic each week as we glorify God together. Be sure to join us at 5 a.m. Central each Sunday for a Call to Worship right here on American Family Radio.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Drew Brees got a lot of media attention by doing a PSA for Focus on the Family, encouraging students to take their Bibles to school. But apparently Mr. Brees either hasn't read what the Bible teaches about homosexuality or he doesn't agree with it. He has been happy to raise money for gorillas, but is not willing to stand up for a group whose mission is to strengthen the family. He is discovering that eventually everyone must take a stand on the issue of homosexuality or be exposed as someone who is weak in the faith. Drew Brees is as close to bulletproof as you can get in New Orleans, so it's hard not to think this is more about his image than a paycheck. He must remember the admonition of Jesus, "Woe to you when all men speak well of you." Jesus' point is that cannot happen unless you compromise on some fundamental issue of truth or morality.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, President Trump further clarified his policy toward Afghanistan. He announced that negotiations with the Taliban jihadists are dead, and while there will be further reductions of U.S. forces there, they will not be dictated by our Sharia supremacist enemies. The president deserves great credit for this critical course correction. The temptation to do otherwise is, as he would say, huge. He is committed to keeping campaign promises to end the nation's longest war. Diplomats yearn for Nobel Peace Prizes. Budgeteers seek spending cuts, and supporters of the military want to end its seemingly futile sacrifices. Now Mr. Trump has the chance to reboot U.S. policy so as to achieve significant reductions in the U.S. presence in Afghanistan without surrendering the place and its long-suffering people to the Taliban and other jihadists. Our Secure Afghanistan strategy shows how. Review it at securefreedom.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
It is a late night at UK's Parliament with the future of the country hanging in the balance. Now, the House of Commons is shortly set to be suspended for some 5 weeks and battle Conservative UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, bending the parliamentary rules to give him more room to get Britain out of the European Union. Before that tonight, however, Johnson will be trying again to get an early election. The debate is happening right now. Here is a bit of what Johnson and a Labour leader, opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn, had to say today.
Of course, we must get Brexit done because the UK must come out
on October the 31st, by October the 31st, or else I fear that permanent damage will be done in the UK.
I think we have to make it very, very clear that we will expect the Prime Minister to abide by the details and the specifics of the law that has been passed.
In fact, earlier today, the Queen gave her royal assent to a bill that requires Johnson to request an extension of 3 months beyond the October 31st deadline if a Brexit deal is not reached. Johnson today, tonight, is saying he really wants a deal, but he's also saying he won't ask for that delay. The emphasis, the possibility of a no deal, a hard Brexit, is the reason given by another top Conservative politician, Amber Rudd, to quit the government. This after 24 so-called rebels were stripped of their party affiliation last week. Also deciding to quit today, Speaker of the House John Bercow. He's announced he's stepping down for family reasons. His comments, as we all know, have enlivened the sessions. His final words, respect the government process. Quote, we degrade this parliament at our own peril. It's not over yet.
All right, that was Greg Powell, caught at Fox News last night, and it isn't over yet. The Brits are really fighting for their lives. They really are, in terms of their national identity. As we've told you, Jeremy Corbyn is the Labour leader. He's the forefront of the opponents of Boris Johnson. Jeremy Corbyn and his party, the Socialists, because he is a Socialist, just to reiterate, are one of the things that they want. They want to establish in Great Britain, although socialism is kind of a part of Great Britain, has been since World War II. They want now to take, if you have like a second home, they'd like to have that back, please. And they're going to give it to someone more deserving. If you are a couple that has a family home, but it's kind of too big for two of you, they'd like to have that back too, please. And thank you, because there are probably families who need it more than you do. Katie Hopkins, our British guest, was telling us last week that her 72-year-old father cannot get hip replacement surgery because he is, after all, too old. And so this is the state of the move of socialism in Great Britain. And this is really the stark choices that the British people have to make on, you know, policy that affects Great Britain. But it's not just that. It's immigration, out-of-control immigration. It's the loss of their own sovereignty and identity because they joined the European Union. And we just heard me talk with Fred Flights about what the European Union's all about. It really is so much more wicked than I can even pause to describe in this moment. And I do mean wicked. I'm not just talking about differences in policies. The European Union at its very core is pretty scary and pretty frightening. So the UK is struggling to get out of Brexit. Nigel Farage weighed in just yesterday, and of course he's been the leader against this massive amounts of immigration. He's been the most outspoken. He's had his life threatened. And Nigel weighed in regard to Brexit. Let's listen.
I tell you what people do want. They want this over. They want it done. They want us to get on with the rest of our lives. And I think, you know, who wants this to dominate our politics, our country for the next 5 years, 10 years?
I totally agree.
Just do it.
To be fair,
I'd like it over. And that's why I'm prepared to help the Prime Minister. I'm prepared to put country before party. And I will work with Boris Johnson if he goes for a clean break.
All right, so this is the thing. You know, we can understand this if we just think about how the American people want the border secured. We don't want an out-of-control flow of illegal immigrants into the country, but the Congress just doesn't do anything about it. And that's where Britain is. The people voted 3 years ago that they wanted to leave the European Union, and now it's been nothing but a bloodbath trying to get Parliament to do that. They've just refused. They've gone through the motions, Theresa May acted like she was trying to do it. She came up with a deal that would have been horrible for Great Britain. And so Boris Johnson is trying to get this to happen. I understand that the president, as in Donald Trump, has already made some pretty specific promises to Boris Johnson about filling in the gaps about trade and helping Britain through this transition period. So I don't know if it's going to happen. Boris Johnson is disbanding Parliament. I really don't. If I understood all of this, I'd explain it to you, but they are going to disband. He wants there to be another election. He thinks that the Brits are going to come out and that his archenemy, Jeremy Corbyn, will be defeated if they have another vote, and that should put it to rest. But it's been like the third national election they've had in just a few months here. So it's a battle. And if you pray for international things, that would be a good item to pray for. Speaking of the Europeans going crazy, we are talking about this Green New Deal. You may remember that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recently sort of brought up the whole idea of Soylent Green. Anybody remember what Soylent Green was? Well, you may be too young to have watched that movie. It was pretty dire and bizarre, like science fiction. You know, like nothing would ever happen like that. And the bottom line was the surprise shock at the end of the movie was the thing that people were surviving on because of overpopulation was what they were being fed, which was called Soylent Green. It turns out Soylent Green is human flesh. Okay, so that's sci-fi, right? Not real. No, but except a Swedish researcher has now said publicly that people should grow comfortable with cannibalism as a way to combat climate change in the future. Magnus Söderlund, a behavioral scientist and marketing strategist at the Stockholm School of Economics, presented at a Food of the Future conference known as the Gastro Summit in Sweden last week. His presentation asked the audience to consider consuming human flesh in the future to help combat climate change. He calls the notion that people should eat other humans as conservative taboo and says the stigma should be lifted in humanity's best interest. In the future, after the most drastic effects of climate change begin to set in, people will have to consume human flesh in order to survive. In an interview after his talk, Söderlund said that nearly 10% of his audience said they were open to trying human flesh. When asked if he would consider eating the flesh of another person, he said, "I feel somewhat hesitant, but to not appear overly conservative, I'd have to say I'd be open to at least tasting it." That's coming out of Europe, which is why I'm trying to tell you that the roots of what's happening in Europe are just wicked. They just are. And, of course, we're finding it manifesting itself here in this country in ways that we never imagined when they had the climate change debate with the Democrats last week. Bernie Sanders, you know, responded to the fact that abortion should be used as a way to help fight climate change, you know, to reduce the population. You can see that it's not what's the quantum leap between making forced abortions legal and birth control mandatory legal, as they've done in China, in order to sort of, you know, control the weather. Makes sense, doesn't it? Because we looked at this hurricane. It was dreadful in the Bahamas. And so if you could, you know, abort a few babies and eat some human flesh to prevent that, you should do it, right? I mean, this is how bizarre. This is really thinking logic out of the pit of hell. And so that's that. And now, let me get some other news, because I just want to drop in some things I think you'll find interesting. Jerry Dunleavy is writing in the Washington Examiner just yesterday. This came out yesterday. And his title is "Comey May Not Be Off the Hook in the FISA Investigation." Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General Michael, said, "We have previously faulted Comey for acting unilaterally and inconsistent with department policy. Comey's unauthorized disclosure of sensitive law enforcement information about the Flynn investigation merits similar criticism. There's little reason to believe Horowitz's next report won't be as bad or worse for Comey. Since 2018, Horowitz has been reviewing the FISA surveillance warrants targeting former Trump campaign associate Carter Page, and the watchdog is likely scrutinizing every aspect of the FISA approval process." And we've talked about this so much, I hesitate to repeat it. But let me just say that James Comey, to remind you, signed off on and approved three of those four FISA warrant applications, which we know were based on that phony dossier, that lying dossier, that made up, that crafted by the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's campaign. Comey knew that, and yet he insisted to the FISA court, the most secret court in the land, most important court in many ways, because of its power to surveil American citizens and others, to order that. He falsified that information and signed his good name to that, what he thought was his good name, what we at one time maybe thought was a good name. He falsified. He swore under oath that it was true, and it wasn't. Three times he did that. And so Dunleavy is saying that he thinks that there's going to be some, he may not be off the hook. He said, after all, Horowitz did send a criminal referral to DOJ over Comey's memos, but the DOJ declined to prosecute. So he's optimistic that there's going to be more trouble for Comey in this next report that's coming out soon. I want to also follow up with General Flynn. I've told you that Sidney Powell is his new attorney. Sidney has been a guest with us many times. She is a warrior, and she is stirring up a lot of things. And let me just kind of try to make this clear by way of Brian Cates, who kind of lays this out in a thing called 14 Strange Facts Exposed as General Flynn's In-Game Approaches. And I'm going to read a few of them to you because it helps kind of synopsize things I've told you. These are 14 twists and turns in this case. General Flynn's trip to Russia in 2015, where it was claimed Flynn went without the knowledge or approval of the DIA, which he was heading, Defense Intelligence Agency, or anyone in Washington, was proven not to be true. Flynn was suspected of being compromised by a Russian, supposed Russian agent, Cambridge academic Svetlana Slokova, based on allegations from Western intelligence asset Stephen Hopper. This was also proven not to be true. Flynn's phone calls with then-Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak were framed as being incredibly shady and a potential violation of the Logan Act. This allegation was always preposterous. Unnamed intelligence officials leaked the details of the Flynn-Kislyak phone calls to the Washington Post. FBI agents Peter Strzok and Joseph Pientka were dispatched by Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe to interview Flynn at the White House, even though the FBI had already reviewed the transcripts of the calls and cleared Flynn of any crimes. Both FBI Director James Comey and McCabe testified to Congress that Flynn did not lie. It goes on and on. There's 14 of them, and you can see that it's just so convoluted. And now he is being defended in court in this last-ditch effort, God willing, to have these charges taken away and have the case dismissed. I know that's the end game. Whether it's going to happen, I don't know. The latest thing is that the Mueller team is being accused by Sidney Powell of doing some very underhanded things and withholding evidence favorable to Flynn, which is a process crime by attorneys. And you can lose your law license for doing the things that Sidney Powell alleges that they have done. Now, the judge has to make a decision whether he believes Sidney's facts or not on that case. So that's what's happening with General Flynn. There's so much. I want to pause to tell you something practical. I mentioned this yesterday, but I was a little cryptic about it, and I want to be plainer. Eagle Forum is having their big Eagle Council event September 20th through the 21st. And yes, I will be there, and I'd love to see you if you're in or near Washington. And I'm going to tell you who else is going to be there. Gordon Chang, Congressman Dave Bratt, Heather McDonald, who is phenomenal. She's now with Independent Women's Forum, I think, but she used to be with, I think, Manhattan Institute. Heather is brilliant on all things police-related, Black Lives Matter, violence statistics. She's just phenomenal. Joy Pullman is an expert on all things education. Senator Marsha Blackburn will be there. Cal Beisner, who is an expert on climate change. And Elaine Donnelly, an expert on social engineering in the military. And Carrie Severino, who's been our guest many times, who is an expert on judicial nominations, what's happening in the Supreme Court, et cetera, et cetera. And that's all I have time to tell you about. But it's September 20th through the 21st. It would be so nice to see you there. And if you'd like to go, you can find it at Eagle Forum's website, eagleforum.org. And you can go, you'll see it. It's the Eagle Council, September 20th through the 21st, and it will give you more information. And you can find out how you could sign up. It would be great to see you there. I'd just be delighted to see you in person. I always am. Hey, listen, thanks for listening, and I hope you'll stay tuned. We have some really interesting things to cover in the days to come. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.